So, where should we start?
So happy to be here, and I absolutely love all these conversations that you're having. They're so
Yeah, I
aligned with
think
how I
even a
think
half
these days.
day, even
So,
2 hours of just
I
like,
help
as long as
speakers
it's
of English as a
dedicated, I
second
think it's so
language
much about
communicate
consistency.
confidently
This is
and
an amazing
joyfully
discipline.
in
I think
English.
this is what I wanted to do.
And
And
you can
I
start to
suddenly
see your life
realized
shift,
that
you
this
start to
is the
feel your
time
life
for me
shift.
to make the
And that's
moves
when
that
your
I wanted
vibration
to make.
changes and you feel confident and empowered on the next phase of your life.
So, what looks like work for you?
Welcome back to Looks Like Work, everybody. It's been a while. It's been a minute. It's been actually over a year. But we're back with season two, and I'm so excited. I'm your host, Chedva Kleinendler, and today we have a little bit of a different type of episode. Olivia here, Olivia Driesen-Howell, CEO and co-founder of Fresh Starts Registry, and a dear friend of mine you might know from season one of Looks Like Work, is here to actually interview me, and we're going to have a conversation about some endings and some
Yeah,
beginnings.
where were
Exactly.
you?
And where we're going from here. So thank you so much, Olivia, for doing this. I'm so happy to have you here, and I'm so privileged to have you as a friend.
I'm so happy to be here. When you asked me to take over hosting duties for the day, it was like I
Yes,
won the lottery, so I'm thrilled to be here. I hope I can fill your amazing seat for the day.
oh, and we have to shout out your podcast because not only are you an amazing storyteller and conversationalist, you are the host of your own podcast. It's not like you needed this hosting opportunity. So maybe you can tell folks about your.
Yeah, which we still need to get you on. So it's called A Fresh Story, and we have six seasons. We're working on season seven and eight. We kind of produce
Incredible.
multiple. It's been amazing. And so we have conversations with people about both their fresh starts in life, but also we're kind of digging into more of like the fresh conversation topics. Like we like to touch the things that people don't like to talk about, right? So we're gonna have a lot more kind of those big conversations coming up. But I'm just thrilled to be here, and I love your podcast, obviously,
Thank
and
you.
to get to turn the tables a little bit. So first of all, let's just say, how are you today in this moment of time, like before we jump into everything? For our listeners, she looks beautiful. She has a smile on her face. So how are you doing today, friend?
I'm so good today. Thank you for asking. Actually, having a really good day. Been working with this amazing nonprofit. I'm at the steering committee of Nivchalot for representing ultra-Orthodox women in politics and in other decision-making, arenas in life. So it was a really nice morning helping them with some stuff. I'm good. I'm relieved, you know?
Yeah, well, I want to know, you're really good about getting yourself treats. You always post on social media. You get like a latte or like I think it's, what's the last treat that you had that you were like, this is delicious?
Oh, I love that. I did get like a really nice pastry in my meeting with some I think raspberries or some sort of like fruit. It was really nice. And I had a gorgeous plate of like pesto pasta yesterday.
I love pesto pasta.
I was actually having like a low morning and my friend was like she was like whisked me away for lunch and it was delicious and really great.
I love that. I love that. So, I think people may be wondering, and we're going to get into it. Where have you been the last year? What's going on? Do you want to take us a little bit of a timeline over the last 12 months of your life here? Just casually.
Just casually, I was busy picking up the pieces of my life to
Yeah.
not be dramatic at all.
You're allowed to be dramatic here.
Yeah,
It's your podcast.
I'm a drama queen. I'll be the first one to admit that. So basically, I broke up with my husband of 19 years. We had quite a year. My son was diagnosed with autism, and we're a very proud, neurospicy household now. I'm also finally been diagnosed with ADD, not that it was a great surprise to anyone.
Welcome.
And yeah, not a surprise that you're also one of us, Olivia.
Welcome.
And went through a really rough breakup and divorce. It wasn't easy, not the thing itself, and not kind of the ripple effect of the community around us and family and all of that. And being a mom as you well know, and being an entrepreneur, as you also well know. Mm-hmm. Not easy in general, but definitely not when you're going through, you know, we talk here a lot about the kind of intersection of life and work. So when you go through these things and when they affect like the way you view yourself and when you, how you're viewed from the outside, it was definitely not easy emotionally, financially, mentally, all of the above. And I'm really, really happy to be on the other side of most of that.
Yeah. So take us back, you know, as much as you want to, kind of to that, you know, we talk culturally about divorce, and I think there's so many misconceptions about it, and you're kind of in this unique situation, which we'll also get into, you know, but from just a human, like, mother-wife standpoint, take us back to kind of those feelings when they started coming up, and you were like, maybe I should look into this a little bit more. What was that process like, if you wouldn't mind sharing?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to go into too much detail. I want to respect everyone, but I think it's so important to share, like you do on your podcast and any of your guests do, because we need to normalize it. And so many people from all different communities have so much trouble, like, and there's so much shame around it. So I think, you know, some things didn't work or didn't feel amazing many, many years. And I think like many families and couples with COVID coming, a lot of things bubbled up. I think it's both the crisis and like the anxiety of like not knowing where the world is going, but also, you know, we went from a household where I was this, you know, entrepreneur. I was on a plane at least half, you know, at least 50% of the month I would be abroad raising money, talking to potential clients, because we live in Israel and most of our target audience was in the US and Europe. And also, as like an ultra Orthodox entrepreneur in Israel, there was a lot of bias. So I found it easier to be away. So that was, you know, challenging on its own way, but also it kind of helps you mask some stuff that don't work. And it helps you kind of like really focus on the practicalities of life. And then COVID came and we're all, you know, at home. And you don't have where to go, and you really kind of reality just hits you in the face, and you kind of need to deal with it. And then for me, you know, even with some stuff not working ever, there's a lot of love and respect and care. And I want to think about myself as a caring person. So a lot of thought and feeling went into trying to fix up things. And when it didn't go, you know, I did a lot of work with myself, and I feel like really, really lucky for having started therapy just like a second before COVID, like in November 2019, from a completely different reason.
Yep.
And as someone who can be quite impulsive, and I'm like a very, very decisive person, I think a lot of us entrepreneurs are, you know, who of us hasn't, you know, bought like a domain for a new thing at like 2 a.m.
You're attacking me personally, but yes.
I know, Olivia.
yeah.
As someone who's like really can make decisions very quickly and be very happy with them usually, I consciously decided, even though it was very, very painful, to sit with this decision for a while and like sit in the discomfort. And I asked my therapist, I like outright asked her to not make my life easy about it. And she did it. She really, really challenged me. And we worked through this first about whether it's the right thing or not to break up. What can we do? Are some of the things that are not working, are they, you know, the other person, or are they like stuff that I have to work on? And then when it seemed like the decision was, you know, inevitable, how to do it? Like one thing I'm really, really, really grateful for to my therapist for teaching me is finding not only the what I say or even how, but who do I want to be in that situation? In her methodology that she works with, Satya Method, it's like really very close to meditation and to yoga. It's like very much about being in your body and knowing, how do you want to feel? Who do you want to be about it? And also holding yourself accountable, because if you're going to be generous, you're going to have to also be generous to yourself and not just outside. And after a while, I did that conversation. I unfortunately had to deal with a lot of suppression and gaslighting. And at the end of the day, because that came not only from the person I was married to, but from the family and the community as a whole, I found myself in a very weird situation, you know, as someone who thinks about herself as a very strong person and woman. You know, I've been an entrepreneur. I won awards. I was in magazines, you know, all of that. I think about myself as a trailblazer. And suddenly I found myself in a place where I had like crippling anxiety and I needed to move out while being scared. And I honestly only took, I'm looking at my apartment now, and I only took with me like my two, you know, my Shabbat candelabra, my desk chair that I'm sitting on right now, a few clothes, like 30 books out of my 3,000 books, like very, very little. Because it was a very weird and not amazing situation. And I'm glad to be on the other side of it. And then, you know, and then you build from scratch. And it isn't easy even for people who are used to building, you know?
Yeah, you know, so much of what you said is, it's so interesting because the divorce story is actually very common, right? Yeah. Like from a woman's perspective, it's like, I always say it's kind of like Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, right? It's very similar to me, right? You get your little nudge and you're like, I deserve something more, like right? Something
discomfort,
more.
Yeah.
Right, that discomfort. And then you kind of have to go out and like you said, you were in this dark place, but you had to find a new space and all of these things. If you could share, and I really love what you said, because I did something very similar with your personal ethos going through a divorce. I think we don't talk about this enough from a divorced woman's perspective. And because I feel like we're still culturally trying to figure out how to support people through a divorce, which is the work I do, right? And you know, so much of divorce is wrapped up in like law, right? Divorce lawyers, and you just go to divorce lawyers. But I love what your therapist did with you, which is like, let's figure out who you're going to be through this process. Because if you can stay with that brand ethos, right? I'll use marketing terms because that's what you do, right? Of like who you're going to be through this divorce, you're going to come out a lot stronger. So what were some of those values that you held really closely to you when you were going through this?
So I actually happen to have the notebook where I wrote them.
Look at that.
This is actually like really funny, because like not a funny haha, but this is a notebook that, you know, 10 years ago, can you imagine? I did like these workshops with my friend Tamar, teaching brand owners how to do marketing on Instagram and Pinterest. And these are like the two last notebooks that lasted.
Because it is branding. Yeah, your brand. I love it. I love that. It is a branding process, right? It's who you're going to be through this. Yeah. So what did you write?
Totally. So I actually found it recently because I thought I lost it, but I just found it like a month ago. And it says honest, compassionate, generous, present, breathing. And it was like, was not a easy process reaching these. It was like kind of carving them, you know, out of stone. And you know, they really were with me for this entire year, and I had to stop therapy at some point because of like budget constraints. Thankfully I'm back at it, but I really felt like these were like my northern stars throughout this journey. And I kept coming back to them, sometimes like unconsciously just doing things out of them and then realizing, and sometimes like really like kind of taking a moment, breathing, which is one of them, and like trying to remember like, oh, what were they like? What, you know, am I doing it? Am I doing it like just externally? Am I also doing it internally? And it was really something that embraced me, you know, like it was there for me when I was like very, very alone.
Yeah, I love that. And the breathing is really interesting because I too remember I worked with a friend and she was a healer during my process. And she was like, you need to breathe. And I'm like, well, I am breathing. But no, you actually need to breathe, right? Not those shallow little tiny breaths, but like really get oxygen in your system. So I
know.
I get that.
And we're so reactive a lot of times, especially, you know, we're ADD, we're fast. We're like, we kind of iterate other people.
Everything. Yeah.
And then like just the breathing. And for me, it really connected to also listening I think listening was almost there, and then I replaced it with breathing because it was the same thing and like more.
Yeah.
I don't agree with the person, you know, gaslighting me, but I can breathe and let them speak and then iterate what they say. Like, I hear that you're saying this and this. I understand that you feel this way right. about it, but, right. you know, and then I go back to my honesty, and honesty was also something that was like, do I want to be strong or honest? Yeah. And like with strong, like I really felt like it could really be there for me, but I also felt like it could be there also against me. And because I also wanted to be soft, you know? So right. honesty like really held me onto like, I'm not gonna let go of my truth. I'm gonna hold it dearly yep. with your life. Yep. Yeah. And I'm gonna stand for it, but I can yeah. still be soft. I don't have to be tough, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that. And you couldn't really be so tough because you had a son to take care of at the same time. And shepherding your children through a divorce is a really tricky, beautiful, yeah. heartbreaking situation, which we can get into in a little bit. So I always say divorce is not about winning or losing. It's about finding.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and I, because so much of what we believe at Fresh Starts and what my personal kind of ethos about writing about divorce is, it's not about the other person, right? This has almost has nothing to do right. with that other person, right? So if you could take us through the process of what was it like to pack up your things and find a new space, and you are very happy in your new space.
I am.
So yeah, so what was that process like? What was going through your body and mind during that time?
You know, when I first heard from my lawyer that I'm going to have to move out, it was such a kick to the gut. I think more than a lot of other things that seem much bigger, because I'm such a homebody. And, you know, some listeners know that I used to have a home decor blog. And it's just like, I feel like every corner, every like fiber, everything, you know, in my space was so, man, we've been there for like 12 years. I don't know, it felt like very personal and very hard. And the biggest feeling for me when I heard that was, and sorry again for being dramatic, but that's who I am.
Hey, you're allowed to be dramatic. I'm giving you permission to be dramatic.
Yeah, thank you. The biggest feeling I was overcome by was the feeling of punishment or exile. And I immediately knew I can't do that. I can't go to another place and for it to be a punishment or exile. Right. I needed to right. feel like the new place is a place we can be happy in. And I needed to feel like it could be a home and it's not like just a few yeah. walls. And it didn't have to be fancy. I actually found like a pretty tiny place and actually like really a steal, like in terms of rent. But it was very, very budget minded, but I decided to reach out to a friend of mine who's a decorator. And I purchased an hour bank of 10 hours of consulting, like mostly through Zoom. And first of all, I felt less alone. Like even while I was looking for apartments, I sent her the pictures and she helped me decide. And second of all, I knew, you know, I have a design vision. I love designing, but usually I'm a very slow designer and I never really believe it. And yeah. I think a house is like something very layered, but here I needed that anchor. I needed to feel like this is a home. So she really helped me and I was all over the place. I was so overwhelmed with so many other things that are not even, yeah. you know, the apartment. So she really helped me kind of, she took my vision out of my head, like almost like it's the Pensieve, you know, in mm-hmm. Harry Potter, where like mm-hmm. Dumbledore puts his thoughts and dreams into this whatever yeah. sieve. And she did a lot of the research. And she also helped me find amazing deals on Facebook Marketplace. Like my 90% of my house is Facebook Marketplace. I basically furnished the entire place for like 10,000 shekels. That's like that's around like $3,000.
Okay. Yep.
That's great. And it was, I don't know that I would have known or would yeah. have the capacity, you know, at right. that specific right. time to do it. And really, you know, we had to move a day or two earlier than I expected because of, you know, a lot of things going on. So it wasn't amazing, but within a week, we had a place with, you know, our listeners can't see, but like this just warm feeling, this wallpaper mm-hmm. that feels really personal. My son has his geeky corner with all his Harry Potter and Percy Jackson and Darth mm-hmm. Vader stuff. And it just felt, maybe it took it like a week to feel like home. Yeah. And you know, it's after yeah. we've been in the other place for 12 years, but it immediately felt very much like our personality. And then on top of that, we layered more and, you know, we messed up things, which makes things feel more like home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Made our dents and our stains. And, you know, and we got a dog recently who makes a lot of dents and stains. So that was like a very big thing, I think, like just really also giving myself the permission to spend that money and to ask for help.
Yeah.
But also really understanding, I just had this like knowledge that I needed to do that immediately. And yeah. and I didn't argue with that. It's like, okay, I'm listening, yeah. you know?
Yeah. And I think that's so much of what we talk about is like building that hype team around you, right? Of people yeah. And, you know, really, I love that you invested in this person and time and energy and finances to create a home because you deserved a home for you and your son yeah. that was joyful and felt like you. And I'm going to guess that was probably the first time you've made a lot of these decisions on your own about Definitely. A home. Yeah.
I think that's also part of the joy and relief because, you know, you lose so much and yeah. you hurt so much. But there's this like newfound independence and it's just fun. You know, I could like let my, like in my previous place, I had my home office, which was like completely navy blue and felt like a cocoon, but that was like my room. And that was like where I mm-hmm. made my decisions. And here the entire place like feels yeah. like that. You know, the first week was really, really tough from a lot of reasons and a lot of people were very mad and very very angry and they yeah. let it show. It wasn't easy, but I really felt like our apartment embraced us.
I love that.
It was there for us. It was like a soft landing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's your fresh start flat, as we like
yeah,
to say.
Exactly.
So talk to us a little bit about the community around you in the last year and kind of how important it is and why you're speaking up about this now to be somebody else's guidepost through this time and just kind of like how you embraced the support.
Yeah, this is so important. Thank you so much for bringing this up. So Olivia, we don't know each other for many, many years. We only known each other for like
a couple of years.
Yeah, like two years. Yeah. But you know that I'm a pretty vocal person. And I completely lost that during most of the last year because to a lot of people in my community, my choice to no longer be married completely invalidated who I was. And that, you know, was interpreted into accusations and threats and also crazy rumors that were kind of circulating and still circulating around me in my community. And I think part of the beauty of a closed community is that you get so much, you get an extended family, you get mm-hmm. such an embrace, right? But the flip side of it is that just like in a closed family, but again, like yep. times 10, you get more rumors, more drama. People find it very easy to believe a lot of narratives without checking about them, or even, you know, if they take them to be true, they don't like check in on you. That's yeah. why I love your book, which we didn't shout out, like just checking yeah. in on like, okay, maybe yeah. I believe this these horrible things about yeah. you, but I still care about you as a person. And I think it's very easy mm-hmm. when it's, you're in a close community to just like shut out somebody because you have the rest of your community and you don't like necessarily need that person. And it's really heartbreaking. And that's what happened to me. And, you know, as someone who's very vocal, both politically and about things I believe in and about yeah. entrepreneurship, I never let anything shut me up, but I guess I never had a challenge like this. And I had many challenges in my life and in my career, but nothing was like this. And I really found that gaslighting and that intimidation to be not only external, at some point you're starting to get like yourself and you're starting to feel like your voice is not worthy, right? Mm-hmm. And you mm-hmm. start to feel like, you also start to feel intimidated even when someone is not intimidating you. Our last episode of the podcast was in November 2022. Wow. I moved out January 2023. I did record, I think, at least two episodes, February 2023. And I just couldn't bring myself to put them out into the world, both because I listened back to them and I didn't hear myself. Like the episodes were great. The guests were amazing. I was okay, you know, but it wasn't me. I was a shell of a woman. And the second thing was like, I really didn't feel comfortable with putting out anything. I think the first meaningful post I wrote after that entire time breakup and the moving out and everything was in May. And that took so much courage. Yeah. And that was like basically a very, very mild Facebook post, not even saying like we broke up, not even saying we're getting divorced, but kind of just hinting at me moving out. Because I was so lonely and we didn't, you know, we keep Shabbat, so we don't use electronics and we don't go on social media, mm-hmm. et cetera, on Shabbat from Friday, sundown to Saturday night. And I didn't have anywhere to go. It was either me and my son alone or me alone. And nobody thought to check in on me. The amazing thing was that after I wrote it and people started inviting me, I then felt less lonely even on weekends where I was alone because I just knew that I have that option. And, you know, now I feel much better. I feel like I got my voice back little by little. I kind of, I really feel like I'm getting like fragments of myself back every day, every hour. And now I'm in a place where I don't want this to happen to anyone else. And I remember in December, just like a few weeks before my divorce, there was another big drama. And again, people were trying to prevent the divorce. And it was very, very hard. I had a day where I couldn't get out of bed out of fear. I didn't want to face myself. You know, I was too scared of what I might do to myself. And I wrote this tweet, which, you know, it's a little bitter. A tiny bit bitter. But, you know, because back when I was an entrepreneur, you know, I was also like this kind of novelty because there aren't, as you well know, not many female founders get funding. Yeah. And definitely not from underrepresented groups. And while I'm white and, you know, Jewish, which is the minority here in Israel, I'm also ultra-Orthodox and there aren't many of us, and definitely there weren't many of us. Back in 2015 and 16, et cetera. And I faced a lot of bias. And a lot of people back then really admired me for it. And, you know, I got a lot of press, which I probably deserved only a bit of it. But people kept asking me, how does my community, the ultra-Orthodox community, you know, react to me going out and doing different things? And I was actually like, I felt so privileged because people were so generous to me, and they would thank me for kind of showing the secular world and like the kind of general world the beauty of our community and that you can be both, you know. So I wrote this tweet back in December and I said, you know, ultra-Orthodox woman entrepreneur, winning awards, getting funding, being on magazines. And then what the world says is like, oh, how does your community react? It must be so hard. They must be shunning you. And it's like, and then reality, no, like it's great. And then ultra-Orthodox woman entrepreneur trying to make a decision about her own life and get divorced, asking, so have you already been shunned? Did people stop talking to you? Did the entire community, you know, kick you out? And the reality is that that was the reality. And that tweet became kind of, you know, it was in Hebrew, so it became semi-viral. And so many people wrote to me and said, we've also gone through something like that. Mm-hmm. Most of them were either women, shocker, or they were not necessarily women, but they were people who decided not to be religious anymore. And basically the prices that I've paid, you know, I'm still religious. I actually, my faith has just become more strong during this year. Yep. And I can completely understand people whom it's not true for, but for me, that was one of those things that really held me like this year. And I, by the way, feel like my choice to start afresh was a very faith-driven choice, because you can't choose yourself if you don't believe that things will be better, if you don't have hope or, you know, faith, whether it's in God or in the universe or in yourself or just being optimistic. The prices that I've paid and that I keep paying are like a lot of people who've chosen to really leave the community, and it was their choice, but it wasn't my choice. Right. So that was one of the more like the braver things that I wrote, you know, since this entire like year or more like started. Yeah. And outpouring response really showed me how I want to be there for other people. And it's brought me back, I think, also from the place of like self-pity, which was justified, but like being there, like, and feeling my feelings, and, you know, and feeling also very, you know, it takes you back to this very helpless place, no matter how unhelpless you are as a person. It took me back to being this person who believes in abundance and who wants to help others. And also, by the way, part of me where like, no matter what hardship I faced in life before, I always dealt with it by helping others because it gave me energy back. And I didn't have that this year because I just didn't have, I didn't have access to the, that resource, you know? And now, you know, I joined the steering committee of Niv Chavot, which is, doesn't have to do specifically with divorce. Yeah. It has to do with representing women in the religious community, specifically the ultra-Orthodox community. But so many of the issues we face are like in the marital realm, you know. So, so I really hope, I feel like this is already energizing me, and I really hope that I can help other women and other people in general get their own voice or not lose their voice, and feel less alone inside like these life altering situations and processes.
So that being said, can you just very generally explain what the divorce process looks like where you are? Because it's different than America. And, you know, I mean, even in America, it's state by state, right? So what does that very generally look like to, you know, go down that process in Israel?
So it's such a good question because it's so complicated. So basically in Israel, even if you're not Orthodox, you're not religious, as long as you're Jewish, marriage and divorce are dictated by religion. So you have to go through the rabbinate or the rabbinical court. And that puts women at a huge disadvantage because, you know, there are some benefits because the rabbinical court pretty much always says like women should get more alimony and stuff like that. Very nice.
Right.
Because it's, you know, patriarchal and, you know, stuff like that. But the big, 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 you know, white elephant in the room is that a man can choose not to give you a get, which is the religious divorce contract. And there's not a real way to enforce him giving that.
Right.
And if he doesn't provide that, he can still get married. It's kind of iffy and it usually doesn't happen, but basically he can still do whatever he wants. But the woman can't get married again. And even if she has kids with someone else, it's very sketchy legally and halakhically from the religious law standpoint. So women can be very easily trapped. And that was like my biggest feeling in this year. For the first time in my adult life, I felt like I didn't have agency because I was basically trapped.
Yeah.
It's called being an aguna. And it's, by the way, there's a huge aguna crisis in the States as well, because for religious women, you know, Orthodox Jewish women, even though they can be illegally divorced in America, you know, based on, like you said, the state law, if they care about Jewish law, their husbands can still withhold the get, the divorce contract. So there's a big, and there's actually like an amazing movement of like feminist activists helping some women and raising money and putting pressure on the families of these of these husbands. But in Israel, it's like, you really can't. It's like, even from like a bureaucratic administrator, you literally can't do anything.
Right.
So you can have like the divorce, like, you know, case can be handled in the state court or in the rabbinical court, doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, even if you did it in the state court, which is completely secular, you still need that divorce contract. And it's very easy to withhold. Right. You know, there's a lot being happening around it. And a lot of people in the last, you know, decade or two have started to get married outside Israel. So not in a religious ceremony, but the thing is, they still need to get a religious divorce. So unless they just do not get married at all, and like maybe they have a wedding, but like party, but they don't have like anything law binding, they're still stuck with this process. And of course, in the ultra-Orthodox community, this also gets, you know, it's not only a person who might be like a very, you know, bad person who's withholding that, but they have a lot of times the support of the community, and it's a very, very problematic thing. And that was my major fear, basically, because I don't want to make this sound smaller than it is. It was horrible. It was gut-wrenching and heartbreaking to, you know, especially as someone who's such a family person, to have to deal with being basically kicked out. But my major fear was that also it would strengthen the possibility of not getting the divorce. And then there's not much that you can do. That's a huge problem we should be more aware of. You know, we should talk more about.
So just to be clear from what I have, think you said, in Israel, like when you have the religious marriages, right? And then you want a divorce, you need to get the get. And if he doesn't want to give that to you, he can still go on and get married to other people, but you are trapped for where you are.
Yes, but even if you didn't get married religiously, even if you got married in a like a municipality in Cyprus, like a lot of people do, you still need to get a religious divorce. You need to get a get. And, you know, the rabbinical court, like, they feel very bad for the women, and they might like put some pressure on the guy. They might, you know, send some police people to escort them to the court, or, but there's no teeth to it, you know, like they can't really enforce it. And it's a huge problem.
Is it just a signature? Like, what are we talking about here? What is this thing?
Basically, it's not even a legal document. It's like a very antiquated, it's like on a piece of parchment. There's like a little bit of a ritual, but it doesn't, you know, it takes very little time. It's just like the person needs to be there and to agree to do it. I think at the end of the day, you know, the people who are actually branded as get refusers, like the husbands who won't give a get, the number isn't quite like as like crazy as you think, but that's because a lot of them, they don't get to the moment where they refuse. They'll just like make it very, very slow, and then they don't even get to the moment where they will refuse, and the woman is trapped. Like, I know personally a few women who've been trapped in something like this for like 8 years, a decade.
But that's the part that I can't, he can move on and you are trapped where you are. You can't move on. But in that being said, is he not then considered married to multiple people?
Yeah. So like halachically, like from religious law standpoint, he can move on. From the legal standpoint, like the state law, I think like most of like 99% of the time, they're not allowed to unless there's like something very crazy, because multiple marriages are forbidden in Israel. But still, you know, they can have other kids and like the kids won't have the implications on them. It's like, you know, I know women who've had kids with other people when they were like trying to get divorced, and the kids have the ex's name as their father in their like ID, because it's really crazy.
It's a prison, right? You're in like an imaginary, like a prison around, like there's, you just can't see it.
Yeah. And of course, like, I want to say, like, I'm not a legal expert. I'm not a rabbinical expert. You know, I might have, like, unknowingly said, like, a mistake or two. But basically,
the gist is they cannot give you the get. And then you're trapped not being able to get divorced. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, like, a lot of people have given the get, but they've used it as leverage to have the woman agree not to get alimony, not to get, like, a million other things, or maybe pay a lot of money. This is, like, real leverage, and as we know, negotiation, anything.
I mean, and to be clear, obviously, we have examples of this in America, too, right? There are plenty of men who refuse to sign the divorce papers, and women who refuse to sign divorce papers, right, and kind of keep people as, like, a blackmail, right, tool.
Yeah, but this is, like, very one-sided.
Right, it's very one-sided,
you know, and,
right.
And goes exactly into the gender roles and, you know, that we so well know.
And control, right? It's all about control.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think that enmeshed family system that, you know, that is the community around you. And I appreciate how you said it can be wonderful, right? It can be very supportive.
Yes,
right?
You get so many wonderful benefits. We always say it takes a village, right?
I mean, but then on the flip side, right, it can also shun you and then put pressure on him to keep you trapped. You know, and again, this is so common too. I was just talking to somebody who's going through a divorce here in America, and, you know, she is kind of going through the similar, right, he won't negotiate with her type of thing, and she doesn't want to go to court because court here in America, it could be upwards of $50,000, right? And I said, well, he doesn't have money to go to court. And she said, no, he doesn't, right? But his
family. Yes. Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just, it's just really fascinating. I appreciate you shedding light on that. And I appreciate you. I know the bravery it takes to talk about it from where you sit. And I want, you know, to validate that for you. And, you know, for you to remember, people are listening, women are listening, and they look up to you. And it really is important to talk about it. It's 2024. Like, it's time we start digging into this. So that being said, before we let you go, I would love for you to share some of the beautiful things that have happened in the last year. Like, where, you know, this journey that you're on, this fresh start journey and all these beautiful, like, healing process, what are some beautiful things that have occurred, you know, since all of this?
Oh, wow. First of all, I feel, you know, my son and I have always been very close. But the last year with his diagnosis and with our kind of family dynamic and unit changing, I just feel so, so lucky, really, and honored and humbled to get into completely new depths with him. And, you know, he's 17. It's not, I don't take it for granted. Lots of kids, especially boys his age, don't love spending time with their old moms. And it's really, like, the depths and, like, breadth of our relationship and how far it went. This year is such a gift, I think, to both of us, but especially me, because he's awesome. I learned so much from him. Mostly about anime and manga.
Awesome. Love it.
But also about life. Yeah. And, you know, you really, there's a beauty when you have to find your chosen family.
Yeah.
And, you know, Olivia, you and I, and Jenny, your co-founder and sister and I, we've known each other for not that long. And we've just talked about it before starting recording. We've never met in real life, and it might not happen for a while. And still I felt so held and so close, and I hope I also be there for you guys. Yes. Through this year, and that's been true for many people. It was actually really beautiful. I had this fresh start party. I kind of consolidated my divorce and my birthday and did this party. I've never thrown myself a party before. I'm a big birthday monster and I always love celebrating, but it would usually be like just a few friends at a cafe or like a one-on-one situation or a family situation. And this year I went all out. I invited 40 friends, 30 of whom could show up. And it was so beautiful to see. And the amazing thing, Olivia, was that some of them are people I've known for 15 years. And some of them were people that I've known for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Some of them were people I met like 15 years ago. We were kind of like Facebook acquaintances since. And then something this year rekindled the relationship and made it so deep. And really the people that were there, and was like, I have so many dear friends who I love and I didn't invite, because it was like just like the core, like the very, very, very core of the people in my heart this year who were really there for me. And I hope I was there for them. And it was just so beautiful, and it was so validating. And really, we spent, you know, an evening laughing and crying so hard, and thankfully there were also really yummy cocktails. And it was just, I felt like it was like the most beautiful way to wrap up this year, last year, and start this one. And you know, it's also February, so it's the beginning of the year. And then going back into like finding my voice from a different perspective. And some of it is the same voice that I always had, but it has different shades of it. You know, it has like some scar tissue. And while it could be painful, some of it is also really beautiful. And also going back into activism, not from a place of like just believing in the cause and wanting to be there for others, but really from a deep understanding of like the need, you know. And I think there is so much vulnerability in feeling the needs and being there and then going out of that and trying to be there for others rather than being like this maybe more paternalistic giver. And then the last thing is that I've decided to take a partial sabbatical. This is actually I didn't share that with you.
Okay, this is like news.
Yeah, this is like really, really news. I've decided to take a partial sabbatical. I'm keeping a very small roster of my clients, and I'm not taking on new clients. And I'm using it to write my book.
Breaking news.
To heal, you know? So I think that's a...
I love it.
That's a really beautiful thing that's kind of blooming out of this crazy, crazy time in my life.
Well, first of all, that is so exciting. And congratulations on making that brave decision, because making any of those pivots in life takes a lot of strength. And I, for one, would love to read your book, and I will be there cheering you on the whole time. So I love all of that. And I think there's so much that you said that I could extrapolate on and go into forever, but I love what you said about the relationship with your son, because I think a lot of women fear divorce because they fear what will happen to their family unit. And I can't stress enough that the relationship you build with your children post-divorce is so, can be so strong and magical, and really a relationship that you get to be your full self in, right? And your children get to see that, which you don't necessarily have in your marriage. So I love that. And I'm so proud of you. Like, as someone that has been here watching you and, you know, knowing how you really truly couldn't get out of bed some of those days, and, you know, what was happening around you, and that you stayed so true to yourself and came out like this beautiful, gorgeous flower on the other side. So I'm just very proud
of
you.
Friend.
And before we go, what is coming up this season on the show?
So I'm so excited for this season. We actually recorded a few of the next episodes already, so I can tell you with authority and not just guessing that you're in for such treats. So listeners of Looks Like Work know that we have very deep conversations, and also we have a lot of fun, but I think you'll find that the conversations this season are even deeper. We're going to go all in talking about brave, powerful questions and about courage. And yes, we'll keep talking about the intersection of that all and work, but we're definitely going to dive in more to personal stuff and to identity and really finding yourself and then taking it into work. We're going to have more men on the show. Woo-hoo. I know we only had one last season. And it's going to be, I think, more diverse in terms of the backgrounds of people, their professional fields, and also the topics and the directions we take the conversation. Amazing. So I really hope everyone enjoys. But you know what? I'm already enjoying it. So that's what matters.
Amazing. We can't wait to listen. Well, I'm really proud of you. Thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Olivia. Thank you so much for being here for me this entire year. And also today, I couldn't have like thought about anyone better to do this. And thank you for
beautiful.
Your
I can't wait to
beautiful questions.
Of course, always.
Yes, and please go visit Olivia at her company's website, Fresh Start Registry. On her podcast, we'll have like all the links in the show notes. And of course, we didn't get to talk about your beautiful, beautiful books, which are all about exactly what you did today, which is supporting your friends.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I don't know if I told you, but your book was kind of the trigger for me to understand that I could start writing mine.
Oh, I love that.
And I love it. I recommend it to so
many
people. Thank
you. Well, we actually have the book that you're referring to. We have put it on the website. All the scripts are going to be on the website for free.
Amazing.
Yeah, because we actually, you know, talk about fresh starts. We had an amazing opportunity to write another book. And so we pulled that one down from the internet, but we're putting it up on our website so anybody can access it. And so you can go read all the simple scripts now at Fresh Starts Registry. And we're working on another book, which is really exciting. So all good things.
That's so generous.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, you know what? We're all about support, and you are all about support, and you know, just sharing stories. That's what's going to be the most support people can have as they move on.
Agree. Thank you so much, Olivia.
Of course.
I love this conversation. And everyone, I'm so excited for season 2 of Looks Like Work. I hope I'll see you next week on our next episode. And please don't hesitate to reach out to me via social or our newsletter or in any other way you can imagine. Or maybe not. I don't know. It was just like kind of hearing myself speak, and I don't know, this is kind of scary, but in like the regular ways you can imagine. And I'll see you next week. Thank you so much.